This week is basically a tour of the safety system became the incident, a protection rule that made sense once, then quietly started blocking real users. A Kubernetes permission that everyone treats like read-only, but it absolutely is not. A platform example that actually got the control plane versus data plane separation right. And compliant scope expanding in a way that is easy to underestimate until you are drowning in evidence requests. So yeah, not a week of flashy tech, more like a week of go check your assumptions. Hey, I'm Brian, and this is Ship It Weekly. If you like the show, follow or subscribe wherever you are listening. It helps a ton. Everything lives at shipitweekly.fm. Also, I'm starting another round of interviews. If you'd like to come on and talk about real-world ops, hit me up at shipitweekly.fm. All right, let's get into it. Four main stories for today. GitHub reworked layered abuse defenses after legacy rules blocked legitimate traffic. Kubernetes node proxy Git, the telemetry permission that can turn into cluster-wide RCE. HCP Vault and what actually stayed up during a real AWS regional disruption. AWS PCI DSS scope expansion and the operational reality of compliance scope changes. Then a quick lightning round, then a human closer on reasonable assurance turning into busy work and what to do about it. Some of GitHub's legacy defenses are blocking legitimate traffic. So what happened? GitHub had users hitting unexpected too many request errors. And it's not because everyone suddenly got evil, but because old abuse mitigation rules were still active long after the original incidents that created them. So they went back, traced it, and reworked how layered defenses are managed, including how those rules get maintained and retried. This is a February 2026 story, and it's the kind of thing every platform team recognizes instantly. So why does it matter? If you ship defensive controls and you don't give them a lifecycle, they become permanent production dependencies. And that's the sneaky part. A security layer is not just security. It sits on the request path. It can block revenue, it can break signups, it can break API clients, and it can create phantom outages that look like the app is slow when the app is fine. The failure mode is also brutal for teams, because when the source of the problem is an old mitigation rule, the people on call might not even know it exists. There's no muscle memory, there's no runbook, there's no customer complaints, and a bunch of dashboards that lie by omission. Old mitigations are like dead code until they suddenly run your business. So what do you need to do Monday? Do a quick inventory of your traffic safety layers. That could be CDN rules, WAF rules, bot protections, rate limits, edge middleware, app throttles, whatever sits between the user and your service. Now you need to ask yourself two annoying questions. Who owns each layer, not the team, an actual owner? And how do you disable it safely if it starts blocking legitimate traffic? If you don't have a kill switch plan, you need to make one. Even if it's ugly, even if it's toggle this feature flag and accept higher risk for an hour. Then add one reliability metric you probably don't track today. False positives. Not in a philosophical way, in a how many legitimate requests did we reject way. Because once your defensive layer starts rejecting good traffic, it's not a security success. It's an availability incident with a security label on it. Okay, that's story one. For our second main story today, it's Kubernetes node proxy Git and the read-only permission that isn't. So what happened? There's a Kubernetes RBAC permission that a lot of orgs grant to monitoring and observability tooling. It looks harmless. It's git on nodes slash proxy. The intent is basically let this thing scrape node metrics, stats, logs, healthy endpoints, that kind of stuff. But research and write-ups in late January 2026 show how that permission can be abused to reach kubelet permissions and turn into arbitrary command execution in pods. The punchline is simple. A permission that teams treat like read-only telemetry can collapse trust boundaries if you hand it out broadly. So why does this matter? This is exactly how clusters get popped in real life. Not always by some fancy zero day. Sometimes by a permission that was granted for convenience. Because observability stacks are the classic just give it cluster admin snowball. You start with it just needs to scrape metrics. Then it just needs to list pods. Then it needs node stats. Then you're granting node proxy access because charts and docs tell you to. And the scary part is psychological. Permissions like this don't trigger your gut. They don't look like exec. They don't look like secrets. They look like plumbing. So nobody thinks to threat model it. Kubernetes RBAC is a minefield because the dangerous stuff looks boring. So what do you need to do Monday? First, go find it. Search your cluster roles for node/proxy. Then list every subject that binds to those roles. Don't stop at Prometheus. Look for logging agents, APM agents, cluster UIs, anything installed by Helm charts with default RBAC. Second, force the uncomfortable conversation. Which tool truly needs this? Is it using it or is it just granted because it was in the chart? If you truly need it, scope it tighter. Separate service accounts per tool. List namespace access where possible. And document the justification so 6 months from now, somebody knows why it exists. Third, add detection where it matters. A lot of teams only monitor Kubernetes API server audit logs and call it a day. But if the abuse path is kubelet-level behavior reached through proxying, you want visibility into that access pattern too. At minimum, treat node proxy access granted as a review trigger. That permission should not be invisible. That's story two. Story three is HCP Vault resilience during a real AWS regional disruption. Okay, so what happened? HashiCorp published a write-up on how HCP Vault behaved during a real AWS US East 1 disruption. Their control plane experienced elevated HTTP 500s and intermittent panics around 7 a.m. UTC. But they say customer HCP Vault dedicated clusters maintained 100% uptime and kept serving workloads. So the management plane had issues while the data plane stayed up. That's the key. So why does this matter? This is the kind of architecture decision that sounds like overkill until it saves you. Control plane outages are common, not because everyone is bad at engineering, but because control planes are complex and they're multi-tenant and often exposed to weird edge cases. But customers don't care if your admin dashboard is having a bad day. They care if secret resolution fails and their apps stop booting. So that separation matters. If your management layer being flaky can break your production usage path, you built one shared blast radius. And you see this pattern everywhere. Terraform is down so we can't deploy is annoying. Terraform is down so production can't read config is unacceptable. If admin plane downtime breaks prod reads, you don't have separation. Okay, so what are the action items? Do this for your top three critical systems. Write down what is control plane and what is data plane. Then answer one brutally honest question. If the control plane disappears for 2 hours, what still works? Can apps still authenticate? Can apps still read what they need to run? Can you still scale? Can you still recover? Also, check your runbooks. A lot of runbooks quietly assume the control plane is healthy. They tell you to click here, or run this automation, or use this UI. If the whole point is resilience, write the control plane is down path too, even if it's ugly CLI, because the day you need it, you will not be in a calm and well-rested mental state. Okay, that's story three. Story 4 is AWS PCI DSS compliance package expansion and what it really means for teams. So AWS announced updates to their fall 2025 PCI DSS compliance package. They added two services to the scope of their PCI DSS certification, AWS Security Incident Response and AWS Transform. They also added the Asia Pacific Taipei region into the PSI DSS scope. On paper, that sounds like a nice checkbook update. In practice, scope changes have consequences. So why does it matter? Compliance scope changes do not usually break production, but they absolutely create work. And they create it in the most dangerous way. Slow, distributed, easy to underestimate, and easy to turn into chaos when audit season hits. So here's the trap. A scope change lands. Security is happy, leadership is happy. Then 6 months later, some poor team is asked to reprove a pile of controls. Except now, the region list changed, the service list changed, and nobody knows what in scope even means in your org. That's how reasonable assurance turns into hours of evidence churn. And it's why compliance can feel like it fights delivery, even when it's trying to protect the business. Audits aren't the enemy. Recreating proof from scratch is. So if this compliance change affects you and you're in a PCI environment, do a quick boundary check. What accounts are in scope? What regions are allowed? What services are approved? Then decide how you will generate evidence. Not we'll do it when asked. Pick the repeatable pieces now. A reusable evidence package is the goal. One place that says what the control is, how it's implemented, and how you prove it. You can point to it, update it, and stop rewriting narratives every time a new spreadsheet shows up. If you want compliance to be sustainable, you have to treat evidence like a product, not like a one-off homework assignment. Okay, that's story four. Now it's time for the lightning round. Here's some quick hits. GitHub Actions extended the timeline for self-hosted runner minimum version enforcement. Starting March 16, 2026, older self-hosted runners get blocked if they're below the minimum version, with a brownout period between February 16th and March 16th to help you find the stragglers. This is one of those it won't be urgent until it's urgent things. If you run self-hosted runners, go check what versions are actually deployed. Next, Edlamp, the Kubernetes UI project, is now officially part of the Kubernetes SIG UI, and they posted a 2025 highlights recap. The reason I care about this is simple. Kubernetes UIs are finally moving beyond toy dashboard into useful day-to-day tooling, and teams need sane, supported ways to visualize cluster state without giving everyone kubectl to prod. And last, AWS Network Firewall Active Threat Defense. AWS wrote up how it draws near real-time intelligence from MadPod, their honeypot sensor network, and uses that to detect and block threats faster. Even if you never buy the feature, the idea is worth stealing. Speed matters. Threat intel that shows up 3 weeks later is mostly trivial. Okay, that's the lightning round. Time for the human closer. And this week, we're going to be talking about reasonable assurance turning into busy work. There's a thread in r/SRE that's basically the most relatable sentence ever. At what point does reasonable assurance turn into busy work? And the vibe is not we hate audits. It's more like, why are we spending engineer time formatting proof instead of reducing risk? That thread pairs perfectly with the GitHub story this week. GitHub had legacy protections that stuck around. They outlived the incident that created them and started blocking real users. That's what happens when a control doesn't have an owner and a lifecycle. Compliance busy work is the same failure mode, just slower. A control exists. Maybe it's good, maybe it's necessary. But over time, the evidence requests multiply, the templates change, the risk language changes, and suddenly the work is not prove this system is safe. It's translate what we already do into 12 different formats. One comment in this thread nails it. If it's consistent and repetitive, automate the documentation. Audits matter. Formatting shouldn't. That's the move. You don't win by arguing with auditors. You win by making your proof boring. One control, one source of truth, one evidence artifact that stays alive. And then you update it when reality changes, not when somebody sends you a spreadsheet. So my Monday challenge is simple. Pick one control you get asked about constantly. Access reviews, backup validation, change management, whatever. Now, measure how many engineer hours go into evidence churn for that one control in one cycle. If it's painful, good. You just found your next high leverage reliability project. Because busy work is not just annoying. It steals time from actually making the system safer. Okay, that's the human story. Time for a quick recap. We talked about how GitHub reworked layered defenses after legacy mitigations started blocking legit traffic. We talked about Kubernetes node/proxy git and how it's a permission you should treat like a real threat boundary. We talked about HCP Vault and how it's a clean example of control plane pain not taking down data plane availability. And we talked about AWS expanding their PCI DSS scope, and that's your reminder to productize compliance evidence before it becomes chaos. And the human story was reasonable assurance turns into busy work the moment you are just formatting proof. If you like the show, follow or subscribe wherever you're listening. And everything, including the show notes and links, will be on shipitweekly.fm. And if you want to come on for an interview round, reach out at shipitweekly.fm. I'll catch you next week. Thanks.